Okay, Gareth, welcome back to the podcast. It hasn't been long since our first chat.
The trivia. Thanks for having me back, Alex. I
How
appreciate
about you?
you having me.
Yeah, I think obviously for those that listen to our podcast regularly, they'll know that last time you came on and spoke around your work with Ibogaine in particular,
Right.
we touched on 5-MeO as well, but I think just chatting with you off air, it would be great to kind of maybe dive into a little bit more around 5-MeO.
Yeah.
We can touch on kind of cannabis and potentially psilocybin and magic mushrooms as well. So we've got a few things that we can dive into.
Okay, sure.
You want to start with 5-MeO and maybe just again a little
Yeah.
bit of a reminder of what it is and some of the context?
5-MeO. A few years ago, everybody was really excited about the spirit molecule, which is NN dimethyltryptamine. And 5-MeO was not as well known. But then through some like Vice documentaries and stuff, and more of the Bufo alvarius being used and kind of being exposed in the media, if you will. And then and there's been people like Mike Tyson, quite a few celebrities have engaged with 5-MeO, and so that's bringing it into the light, so to speak. And so fast acting tryptamine, I feel that it's going to be an important one in the future. We've always used it on the tail end of ibogaine treatments. That's kind of where I first heard of it being used. I mean, I first used 5-MeO-DMT about 20 years ago in Marin County. But then later it was being used down in Mexico, as I was saying, at the tail end of ibogaine treatments. The ibogaine treatments can be a little dark at times, and there's a kind of synergy that happens when working with the 5-MeO at the end of an ibogaine treatment, which brings in a lot of light and a lot of love and self-love. Can do. It's not always like that, but it's the synergy of the two create something that neither of them do exactly on their own.
Okay.
So that's kind of how we started working with it. So more and more, and as it's becoming more and more popular, now people have been started to contact us about sp working specifically with 5-MeO-DMT. So that has been something that we've been doing increasingly more and more over the last few years. But we've been working with it for the last 8 years. Like I say, more so in the beginning, at the end of an ibogaine treatment. So I think it's going to be a very important psychedelic in the future because of its expansiveness and its duration. It's just got a very short space time span to work with, and so I feel that moving forward, as these substances become regulated and legalized, that it will be because of its time span that it will seem appealing to the psychedelic world and insurance companies, because then the work can get done in an hour, as opposed to something like psilocybin that might take 5 or 6 hours or longer. That's gonna be quite an expensive venture, I feel. As this all unfolds, I think that 5-MeO will become quite an important psychedelic, and people are hearing more and more about it.
Interesting.
So.
And are there kind of clinical contexts where you would consider it over others, apart from what you kind of mentioned there?
There's clinical trials going on at the moment, so and I feel that there's a lot of interest in this new found industry that's coming up. So yeah, I just I think that it's, as it had always been a little bit obscure in the past, I feel that they're exploring different ways of working with it. And what we see here is that there's quite a, the DMT pens are kind of showing up now in the black market. And something else that I've seen recently is a nasal spray. So it works like a nasal spray. It has a very small amount of 5-MeO into it, and then psh, psh, and so it's interesting. You know, most people, when they think of 5-MeO DMT, because it's the God molecule, they, and if you look on YouTube and things like that, it's, it seems like to be this vastly expansive experience, which it can be. But then again, it's all about dose. You know, it can be used in very lower doses as well. I have a friend that insufflates a very small amount and then does yoga because she can get into stretches and poses on a small amount of 5-MeO DMT in a better, more flexible way than she can when she's not, you know. And then I've heard people say that, you know, just even low dose and stuff like that really helps people with their meditation practice and centering, calming. I, for myself, whenever I use it, which is maybe 5 or 6 times a year, it's kind of to recalibrate, if you will. It's a difficult subject to talk about because 5-MeO is what they refer to as ineffable. So the or the experience, the high dose experience is ineffable. So it's a bit hard to describe, you know.
Yeah.
What I will say though, with the higher doses, the most common expression that we hear is holy fuck, which is a kind of common Canadian expression, but you know, that's kind of hits the nail on the head because people are quite taken aback by that experience, you know.
Okay.
And so yeah,
it was 5-MeO that in our last conversation you were saying that some practitioners were, for one of the better way of putting it, being quite aggressive. Was that right in regards to their dosing? And...
Yes. Well, that was, and unfortunately, there was a couple of practitioners in Mexico that were using it in a quite a heavy-handed fashion. You know, with a lot of, with not a lot of prep and integration afterwards, and big groups. And I've had a client that comes to us that was traveling through Mexico, and he saw that this bufo ceremony was going, and he thought, oh, well, I should go and check it out, you know, because he'd worked with us a few times. And I should say, we don't work with bufo alvarius. We work with the synthetic form, but down in Mexico, you know, that there's the gathering or acquiring of the medicine hats in Baja, Northern Baja. And so that's mostly, it's been Mexican practitioners have been using it down there. And there's two, I'm not saying it's all of those practitioners, but there were two practitioners that got quite a lot of media coverage. And, you know, I think that they were using that in something of a careless manner. You know? And my friend, our other client that had gone and experienced one of these things down in Mexico, he said about 30 people showed up, and they give you one dose, and it's a very high dose, and it blasts you, or, you know. And whenever we work with it, we work with it very slowly. I mean, this isn't something you can do with bufo toxin or bufo venom, but with the 5-MeO the synthetic form, you can step people in very, very slowly into that experience by starting with insufflation, the correct term for, you know, snorting stuff. And then that's a very gradual way into that experience. But for the most part, it kind of, you know, when you think about people smoking DMT, it's a very rapid up and then a kind of a down with a curve like this. Or actually, really, what happens is you drop down deeper within yourself. So it looks almost like a tick.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And so that's with the vaporization. With the insufflation, It's more of or you kind of drop down in and then you level off for about 45 minutes and then slowly start coming back up. And as you slowly start coming back up, that's when we go in with the insufflation. I mean, sorry, with the vaporization, which is a much more rapid onset of the compound. But you've already spent time, like 45 minutes in there, so you're making friends with the space, becoming comfortable in it, and then dropping a little bit deeper. With the vaporization, that normally lasts anywhere from like 10 minutes to 30 minutes. And then our cue that we will drop in a little bit deeper again is when somebody lifts up the mask and looks and either wants to talk a little bit or maybe go pee or something like that. But then we will drop in again. So when we work with the medicine, it can be that that whole thing might happen over an hour and a half, whereas in Mexico, that whole thing is happening in seconds as they put a very large dose of bufo into a pipe. Boom. Which can be extremely shocking, and some people have been traumatized by that. It's like being thrown into the void, or there's a suppression of the default mode network or the ego. And so when we're doing it, I feel that what's happening is that, and it's not really the ego is being tamped down or pushed down. How I like to describe it is that you're more connecting with everything else. But that can have a very death-like quality to it if it happens too rapidly. And of course, that can be very destabilizing and traumatizing, and has been. And that's why these two practitioners got a bad rap by, going too fast too soon. It's a little bit like saying, hey, you've never tried LSD? Here, have five hits, have at it, So it's so it is a it is a very I feel important and exciting psychedelic for what can happen in the kind of returns that can happen with people. We repeatedly hear people say that, they're not suffering from depression that they were or their anxiety. It's not like that for everybody, but often people, report that and it helps them with things like that.
And is that using just 5-MeO or is that, yeah, okay. Interesting. And you mentioned before we started recording that you've started a new course.
Yes, I have. Which is down in Deposit Land, and I am drawing a complete blank at the moment with who it's with.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, okay, but sorry, senior moment.
That's
But yeah, it's again, that's a little bit like synthesis, or quite a bit like synthesis. We have, guest speakers and stuff, and it's once a week on online, and then we have assignments and stuff like that. So yeah.
And what's the sort of legal status with five? I think I might have asked you last time, but I can't remember.
Well, it's not strictly it's not illegal here, and we purchase it in Canada, but we purchase it for research purposes. I believe that I fertilize my hydroponic radishes with it,
Perfect.
which is, it's the kind of answers that you have, questions you have to answer with a lot of these research chemical companies, just
Right.
to prove that you're not using any of the substances for human consumption.
Okay.
And they a lot of these companies sell things like 4-ACO DMT, which is synthetic psilocin, and these are when they're doing psilocybin trials, that's what they use. And so there's quite a lot of research chemical compounds. Quite a few of them were created by Alex Shulgin, and so and they're not illegal in some places, in some of the states as well. They're not illegal. It depends. It varies from state to state. And 5-MeO was flew under the radar in the States, I believe, until 2011.
Oh, really?
And could be purchased by research chemical companies.
Huh.
So that's the legal status. But you know, we have mushroom dispensaries here in town, and we have one in particular, and he's selling NN-DMT and 5-MeO-DMT pens and microdose LSD and stuff like that. So, well, you know, we're in Vancouver. He's in the downtown east side. The downtown east side is an open air drug market where, you know, gangsters and their minions are, you know, because of the illegality of the drug trade. And yeah, that's kind of an epicenter of addiction down there. So so he's in that area with a, and I just drove through there yesterday and saw that there's yet another mushroom dispensary has opened. So, you know, Dana also has a place for getting your drugs tested for free. So it's because a lot of the harder drugs are contaminated here with fentanyl and stuff. So he's doing a lot of public service. And he's kind of stuck his neck out on the chopping block. But I feel if they came and raided his dispensary, he would put their drug laws in court. so they're kind of like, yeah, let's pretend that Dana's not there doing this out in public, you know. But Vice have done a couple of series on him and stuff like that. So, you know, things are kind of out in the open here. And now I think we have some mushroom dispensaries have opened in Toronto as well. And
okay.
So, yeah.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, things are moving along. A friend of mine started Theracil, which is a non-profit here in Canada, helping people navigate Health Canada and the exemptions, special exemptions to use psilocybin.
Yeah.
But Health Canada have been dragging their feet with people, and which is ridiculous. Because we, you know, them saying, no, we don't want to give this person an exemption to use psilocybin for end of life. When we have the MAID system, the assisted end of life here.
Okay. You
know? And now we have mushroom dispensaries popping up all over the place. So we're in a weird time right now. It's all, you know, the drug war is coming to an end. It's been a colossal failure, and if anything, it's made things much worse. Yeah. You know, if we'd had heroin dispensaries downtown 10 years ago, we wouldn't be losing six people a day, which we're losing in the province because of tainted drug supply. You know, so it's kind of weird how everything's changing. Cannabis was legalized here first after Uruguay. Or Paraguay, is it? I'm not too sure. And psychedelics are kind of next, you know? It's just, we don't know what the framework will be around that, you know?
Okay.
So, you know, so it would be nice that if we could have some kind of regulated system for people, but then also, you know, a decriminalized area for cognitive liberty for people. And allow people to be able to work with who they'd like to, as opposed to, you know, you've got to go to these people or these therapists or so it's an odd situation. It's like they're almost like they're circling the wagons in some respects, you know, and then they're giving up as well. So it's like it will be interesting to see what 420 is like this year. Because we have a big cannabis celebration in the last few years, really since legalization here and COVID and everything, we haven't been able to have a very good 420 celebration. And when that happens, it's not regulated cannabis. It's none of the, you know, the companies that now sell cannabis in stores, they won't be there. It'll be completely, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. And then also that's more or less turning into a mushroom festival as well, because anybody that's showing up selling cannabis is now selling mushrooms by the ounces and by the pound.
Wow, very different to a
West Coast, babe. Well, it is. It's kind of it runs all the way up, you know, really the West Coast of the States, you know, San Francisco, LA, San Francisco. It's rose colored glasses and sunsets and weed and mushrooms now.
Just comparing that to little old Farnham in Surrey. And
yes, I know, you know, and I'm always like, it's coming. Then I go to Britain and I'm like, oh, it's not coming soon.
We're a long way behind, I think, there. Yeah. But I was saying, we kind of just very briefly mentioned off air that I just recently recorded a conversation around medical cannabis in the UK.
Right.
It's accessible, kind of.
Yeah.
I think from the vast majority of us, it's the financial side that's going to block a lot of us being able to access it.
Which is a shame. Britain is the UK is the number one grower and producer of medical marijuana in the world.
Wow.
It's grown in big factory warehouse spaces all up and down the country.
And we just export it all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes into Savatex and stuff like that, sprays and things. So, yeah, it probably goes to a lot of different medical cannabis companies, And then you've got quite a big CBD thing there, but I think a lot of that would probably be coming from hemp.
So, yeah.
But yeah, you know, to think that you're the biggest producer for other people, except citizens.
That's
crazy. Yeah.
So you work with medical cannabis, and did you say that you make it?
Yeah, like we've been making oil for a long time. I use it myself for insomnia. So I get a better night's sleep. And then also we use it sometimes in our opiate detoxes. If people are not cannabis naive, then we don't, but a lot of people, you know, are happy to use cannabis, and it helps with the detox process and helps with sleep. It helps potentiate the morphine, so the morphine lasts longer and stuff. So we've always been using it, and then we're in the new movie Dose 2. We were in the first movie Dose, and then the second movie is about a lady who she was one of the first people to get exemption to use psilocybin with her therapist from Health Canada. And so the guys that made the first film were told about her. Somebody else has already started a movie with her, but they weren't filmmakers and they needed somebody else to take over. So they took over the movie and, filmed Laurie doing psilocybin a couple of times. And then they asked her if she had been using medical cannabis for her cancer. And she said no, that she just used gummies, I think, a little bit for her when she was using chemo, because cannabis can greatly help with the adverse symptoms that come with chemotherapy. And she said no. And so they asked her to look into it. And that they knew a guy, which is me. And so they contacted me, and through the community, actually, we managed to get a pound of organic cannabis from some organic cannabis growers here in town. We got six different strains, which is what is preferred to do, to have between six and eight different strains. And then we used some, what we use is food grade, 100% food grade alcohol. And then we made the oil, and actually we make it in the movie. We go over to her house and make the oil, me and her together. And so it's an important part of Dose 2, and her cancer goes into remission, which, you know, I think is a combination of the oil and the mushrooms. You know, the mushrooms helped her have a shift in the way she was viewing life. And so, yeah, it's a good movie. And so and then you know they touch on the effects of high dose cannabis oil on different types of cancer. There's a good movie on Netflix. It's called Weed the People, and that's just about kids that have gotten cancer and how they're using cannabis oil with children in the States, mostly in California, I believe. But I think some stuff in Colorado as well, or where medical cannabis is legal. And now in the States, most states have some form of medical cannabis or legalized cannabis, or decrim or something like that. And I feel that under Biden now, what will happen is that suddenly one day, federally, it will be legalized, and then it will be up to the states, which it kind of is at the moment. But but there's people are still in some states are still suffering from terrible punitive laws. In places like Alabama, still people doing 20 years for small amounts of cannabis. Black people mostly, brown people.
That sort of connection relationship with the role that psychedelics can play in helping us shift our narrative and, like, as you said, how we're relating to life, I think is such a profound component to it. And I've just finished reading No Bad Parts from I think it's Richard Schwartz, who is it's all about internal family systems. And it really, there are a few examples in the book that really show us the power of the narrative, of the story we're attaching in the different parts that we have. And I think, in my experience, psychedelics can really help us connect with some of those parts that we've exiled. I'm really excited to kind of follow that side of things. But Gareth, there's something that I don't think I ever have said to you, which is I watched Dosed before starting Synthesis, the training. And I think it was probably on the first or second call that I saw your face in one of the little Zoom boxes. And I generally reacted as if I'd just seen like some Hollywood celebrity. I've seen him in a documentary. I think it was in the first breakout Zoom call that we had. It was you, me, and someone else. And we had a question, obviously, that we had to share with our little breakout team. And I took up like 90% of the time, and I felt so bad. And I sent you a message on Zoom directly saying, I'm sorry, Gareth. You basically didn't speak. And then I didn't hear back from you. You probably obviously just didn't see the message. And then I
Oh, right. No, I couldn't have
started.
done. I must have missed it.
So that's my little story of my first introduction to Gareth on Zoom.
Well, it's funny. Once in a blue moon, I'll bump into somebody. Like I was at the pool, and we were sitting in the whirlpool there, and I could sense this guy's looking at me, and eventually he goes, "Excuse me, are you in some movie about mushrooms?" And I said, "Oh yeah, I am actually." And he goes, "I knew it. I knew it. I was telling my roommate that guy at the pool. He's in that mushroom movie." So, so it's a small place, Vancouver, as well. So it's kind of happens once every now and again. So
Excellent. And then
yeah.
you can use psychedelics just to keep that ego in check, Gareth.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Brilliant. I mean, is there anything else that you want to share from a medical cannabis perspective? I mean, we spoke in the previous conversation, and some of our regular listeners will know that it can be helpful in inflammatory bowel disease and gut issues, pain issues.
Yeah, there's so many things. I also use it for ADHD. It's either going to be that or methylphenidate or Adderall or something or other. And so going the natural route is preferable for myself. I mean, it's just been medical cannabis because it's been I'm trying to think what year it was that medical cannabis started happening here. But it was one of the first places, so it's just been around, and it's remarkable how different it is when I come from here in the colonies and then go back to Britain and see how it's not accepted. Of course, that's changing a little bit now. I mean, you've had some kids with epilepsy and stuff like that You know, there were some activists that I seem to remember were trying to get themselves arrested to have this all be brought up into the media and everything. And so, and as I recall, those activists that did that haven't even gone to court yet, so they don't even really want to to do that. But what's come about has that you do have an oil program now, you know, which, it'd be interesting to see exactly what the access is. And then also the costs, you know. Cannabis has always been very expensive in Britain, and I think that's also due to the punitive, you know, laws that you have around it, you know. So, yeah.
It's a real thing.
And then when you have those, when it's very expensive as well, then that also makes it very attractive for criminal gangs. And I hear now that a problem in Britain is that the price is coming down, and that's because the Albanians are now dominating the market, you know. Wow. Which isn't so good because a lot of larger kind of groups that do things like that are often using chemicals that would be preferred, that would not, in a regulated market, that wouldn't be happening.
Yeah. I guess that's for me, I think, is the biggest concern ultimately. Because when you think about how, you know, we're talking about a plant that's been, I think, used for sort of 10, 12,000 years ultimately from a medicinal perspective.
Yeah. And then demonized, you know, in the war on drugs, you know, and the last part was from Nixon 2.0.
Yeah.
Mr. I am not a crook, you know, to think that we're, you know, still following those policies. You know, really, the harmful part about drugs is being caught by them, being caught with them. You know, that's a lot of the real harms around a lot of drugs. You know? And then, of course, due to their illegality, is contamination and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But prohibition doesn't work. Never worked with alcohol. Doesn't work with drugs. You know.
Yeah.
If it was, you know, it looks like drugs are winning in the war on drugs, you know.
Yeah.
But of course, it's not, you know, they're inanimate objects. It's not, you know, the war is pretty much on poor people.
Yeah.
Because rich white people don't ever go to jail for drugs, you know, unless it's, you know, they're dealing them, not for possession. Mm. It's always, you know, black and brown people that bear the brunt of the drug war.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of the stories I've heard around sort of members of parliament, you know, utilizing drugs, it's just pushed under. Yeah.
Sure. Margaret Thatcher's health minister was addicted to heroin and got away with it for years, but he got caught writing his own prescriptions. But he was her cabinet minister.
Wow.
And sitting on her cabinet for years whilst on heroin. So, you know, now you got, yeah, Harry and Meghan, you know, hashtag H&M, you know, and Harry's coming out now saying that he's used psychedelics and cannabis and stuff. So it's just a, you know, it's a farce.
Yeah.
The drug war is a farce, you know, and the thing is, so what are we going to replace it with? You know, the pharmaceutical companies are salivating and, you know, drooling and rubbing their hands together. But, you know, it's interesting to see how it pans out. You know, everybody thought that they were going to make a mint on cannabis, but it hasn't really worked out that way. You know, a lot of stocks have not worked out, and it hasn't been this huge boom that they think it's going to be. So, or they thought it was going to be. So I'm curious as to how that's going to work with psychedelics. You know, some people will make some money, of course. But psychedelics aren't something that you take every day. If they lost a bunch of money on cannabis, or it didn't turn out to be this huge thing that everybody thought they were going to make gazillions on, I don't see how it's going to work with psychedelics, you know. And with cannabis, most cannabis users use it every day, and so, you know, they run out, they go down to the dispensary or the store and get more. Psilocybin, you know, I might use psilocybin once or twice a year or something, you know.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how this is all going to unfold and, you know.
Definitely.
I'm more excited about the decriminalization of nature thing that's going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's really interesting because apparently there's a big thing in the UK with wild camping in Dartmoor at the moment. And from what I've read, Dartmoor is the last place in the UK that you can legally do it, and that's about to be taken away. So there's a big movement and people asking for donations to kind of fight that. But with medical cannabis, Gareth, is that you still work with?
I will, especially now with dose two, because we make the oil with Laurie. So yeah, now we're getting calls and stuff. People are reaching out, you know. We're more than happy to speak to people about it, you know. So yeah.
And you mentioned earlier using like 6 to 8 strains. So
that's the latest. I mean, all of this is anecdotal, you know. I'm part of a group, Cannabis Oil Success Stories on Facebook, which has something like 250,000 members or something like that.
Wow.
So that's what appears to be doing the best work, when you can get a bunch of different strains, 6 to 8 different strains, normally indicas, I feel. Which is, when people are taking cannabis oil for cancer, that's taking quite a lot. And for people that are naive, you can go in through the back door in the beginning, you know, through the rectum, and then that bypasses the liver, and so there's a lot less psychoactive. So people can start getting a lot into them that way, but I think it's pretty debilitating for a lot of people in the beginning, but then that's also kind of what they need, you know. With Laurie, her husband Glenn was saying he'd get up in the morning to go to work, and he would give her her oil, and she would go back to sleep again. She'd be getting up just before he got home. So she was sleeping hours and hours through the day, but that's kind of what she needed to do as well, you know. So cannabis oil, and people, it's often 60 grams in 90 days is kind of what people are trying to get into them.
Okay.
And that's an awful lot of cannabis, you know. So, yeah. But people build a tolerance to it quite quickly as well. So people can start getting high amounts into themselves. And, there's a lot of stuff on the internet regarding that. It causes apoptosis, which is, as I understand it, you know, the blood not being able to fully get to the cell, and then the cell kind of commits suicide or eats itself, leaving all of the other cells around it intact. You know, but that doesn't happen by smoking a bit of weed. You know, you've got to kind of be doing those 60 grams in 90 days.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
And then I guess finally touching on sort of psilocybin, which I think I'm right in saying is kind of a new addition to your services, as it were.
Yeah, sure. Yes. Well, you know, the importance of psilocybin, I do feel it's an important psychedelic. It's a difficult one for me to work with sometimes on a personal level. I'm always like, oh, we're going to do some psilocybin. It's always like, here we go. But it has been very useful working with other people as well. And so, yeah, we've been incorporating it a little bit here and there. Been working with it recently. It's a little bit more challenging, I find, than from a practitioner's perspective. It can be a bit more challenging than working with Ibogaine and with the 5-MeO. The 5-MeO is a much shorter acting tryptamine, and So it's a little bit more manageable in that respect. As I was saying about stepping people in very slowly,
right.
Whereas psilocybin, you give somebody the dose and then it's like, okay, we're off now. You know? And sometimes that can go this direction or that direction, or, you know, and I find it to be a rewarding psychedelic to work with, but from a practitioner's point of view, it can be a little bit more challenging than the 5-MeO and the 5-MeO.
And did you say previously that it could be less predictable? Does that
yeah happen? Yeah, less predictable is in the effects.
Yeah,
you know, I pretty much know, like, they all have their signature. And whenever you work with somebody, it's always going to be a little bit different, but there's generally a kind of signature to a psychedelic. And sometimes it can just be a bit more challenging. You know, I worked with a lady not so long ago, and, you know, we both knew that her previous psilocybin experiences had been challenging, but she felt rewarding. And so we decided to work with it. I seem to remember it was within about 13 or 15 minutes, she said, I can't breathe. She was having trouble breathing and stuff, and which we overcame that one, but it's set off an experience that was difficult for her and for us as well, for sitting for that. Off to the bathroom on her hands and knees, hysterical laughter on her way back, deep sobbing.
Oh, wow.
Wouldn't get on the bed. We had to sit in the corner, so we got a blanket and a cushion, and then she was sort of wouldn't get on the bed, had to stay on the floor, then wanted to get under the bed, which we kind of drew the line and getting under the bed because it was a very small space. And it was a challenging experience with lots of sobbing and tears that went on for hours that flip-flopped to, you know, maniacal laughing as well. So it was challenging, you know.
Yeah.
I feel that she got quite a bit out of it, though, and got in contact with parts of her deep pain that she was experiencing, so...
I'm just going to turn my light on, Gareth.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, I heard an example recently of a female with rheumatoid arthritis who went for a psilocybin ceremony, and because of the pain she was in, hadn't had a good night's sleep for years ultimately, and she basically spent the entire ceremony asleep.
Interesting.
And you know that saying of psychedelics give you what you need, not what you want, and maybe in that point of time she actually just needed some really deep sleep as part of her
trip. That's interesting.
So yeah, as you say, kind of unpredictable. You just don't know really what's going to come up.
That's interesting that she had that. I find when I take psilocybin, it kind of activates my joints. I feel that I get some inflammation that happens when I work with psilocybin, and with a friend of mine as well. She experiences that. Journey with us in Holland both times, and particularly the second one, I was dealing with a lot of physical stuff, you know, and felt like I had to do yoga or stretches, and it was painful. I think what I said about it was exquisitely painful.
It's interesting that you had that such a similar experience. Having said that, I have very similar experiences where I am similar to the female with arthritis, I think, where I'm often just not put into, but certainly very much encouraged into an incredibly deep rest. It feels incredibly nourishing on a physical level. And I think that's just what I've needed after too many years of striving ultimately.
Right. Yeah.
In regards to the psilocybin, how do you have one approach you take in regards to how you give it to your clients? Is it as a mushroom? Is it a tea? Or do you have options?
We've been working with the straight mushroom of late. We've been working with Penis Envy, and we've got a big choice here, you know. We do go and purchase them, but we could, in some respects, have people go and buy their own, you know. So then we, in some ways, all we would be doing is kind of like harm reduction service,
right?
You know.
Yeah.
But what we have actually been doing is going and buying Penis Envy, and we find you don't need to use very much of that at all. So it's okay to just eat dry with a bit of honey or something or other, you know. Yeah. So yeah, and then you can step in if you need to do a little bit more. We found with the Penis Envy that people don't need to do more, you know. They're quite strong.
Yeah.
And we have, like I say now, because we have these stores, we have that variety, you know, people can go in. It all used to be kind of golden teachers, you know, that was the easiest strain to grow. And therefore, that was the strain that if you were buying mushrooms, that was what you get off of Craigslist or something or other, you know. They've always been very easily obtainable here, you know. But now they... You know, they have all of these different strains, and also, you know, they have it in drinks and gummies and, you know, yeah, sugar cubes. I went to the mushroom dispensary the other day, and they have a bunch of coca leaf teas and stuff, and then you can have microdose sugar with different microdose 4-ACO. There's a phenylethylamine analog that they're using down there. So yeah, so the varieties are huge, you know. So we have a lot of choices to what we could do. But you know, I find that it's easier to just use a strong strain and then just use a very small amount, and then you can add more if you need to.
Yeah,
you know, you can always add, but you can't subtract.
Yeah, that's a good message.
Yes,
absolutely, Gareth. I think it's been a real pleasure to kind of touch base with you again so quickly after our first episode.
Yes, yeah, it's been great.
Have to become one of our sort of almost psychedelic panelists or experts for the podcast. So we'll get you back on at some point soon. But is there anything?
I'd be more than happy to.
Is there anything that you would like to just conclude with? Anything that we haven't mentioned that's coming to mind, or you feel we've covered our bases?
Not off the top of my head at the moment. Of course, as soon as we hang up, I'll go.
And just as a reminder, where can people learn more about you and your work?
Innerrealmscenter.com. .ca or Inner Realms Center.
.com.
Yeah.
Now I'll add links to as well for everyone, so they'll be able to access that very easily and quickly. So Gary, thank you so much. It's I've always learned lots around this when I speak with you, so thank you.
Oh, terrific. Thanks so much for having me, Alex. It's always a pleasure. So